This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. Is sustainable revenue growth a sales issue, or is it actually more of a leadership and motivation issue? Profitable growth can only come through the intersection of strategy, leadership, and sales. How do you make sales into a truly strategic function, moving away from just the tactical and transactional to creating consultative relationships that align with and support your business strategy? Welcome back to Mental Selling, your favorite sales podcast. And to discuss this today, I'm pleased to be joined by Scott Ettinger, founder of Ettinger Consulting and a best-selling author, keynote speaker, and a regular contributor to both Forbes and the Harvard Business Review. His latest book, called The Growth Leader, Strategies to Drive the Top and Bottom Lines, is both a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestseller. Scott, thank you so much for being with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Will. I'm excited to talk with you.
Let's start here. From your perspective, Scott, what do you chalk up inconsistent or poor sales performance today to?
It's really easy, I'd say, first off, to point to the scene of the crime where the sales are happening to salespeople and say they're not doing what they need to. But in my work and in my research over the last couple of decades, what I see when I look at that problem is that you've got to look further upstream to the C-suite, the way the company is being led, the way the company has a strategy around their sales organization and designing and delivering the sales experience to find out what the issue is and where it comes from. And that's why I say growth is a leadership issue, not a sales issue, because if you're not happy with what you're getting from your sales organization, look in the mirror, executives, and see what you're managing them to.
They're not managing it more strategically. Senior leaders want salespeople to view their portfolio and the way they approach their job more strategically. But if they're viewing it more tactically and just focused on the short-term numbers, then they're reinforcing that downstream, aren't they?
Exactly. And this is at the heart of the matter. There isn't an executive, a CEO, a COO, CFO, whoever else in the C-suite, you know, the proliferation of C-suite titles, but there isn't one who would say that sales isn't important, even vital. It's double-edged swords here. It's, of course, critical, but it's not viewed as strategic. Sales is viewed as just get out there and sell. Salespeople disappear in a puff of smoke and they do whatever they do, have dinners, play golf, come back with orders and revenue. It's thought about from the C-suite that strategically, the headquarters, we've got to have the R&D and the product development to design and deliver great services, great products, great capabilities. And that's strategic. And then, of course, managing the balance sheet and the functions of finance, this is seen as strategic. And of course, marketing and use of big data and everything in the market, these are all the strategic functions. Sales just needs to get the hell out there and sell it. And when you hear that, when executives in the research project that we did would say, I just need them to go sell the value. What they really were saying when you got behind it was, I need them to go tell customers all about the value. And it had little to do with a powerful sales experience, which I know we'll end up talking about here. That can be a point of differentiation if you want to grow. I'd highlight executives certainly think about sales as important, but the lack of strategic orientation to the sales function is what caused a lot of problems. And of course, fact of the matter is most executives in the C-suite don't have a lot of hands-on sales experience or a contemporary view of what's really happening in the field.
They might be viewing sales through the lens of whatever their experience was, either personally or 20 years ago or whatever the case may be.
In the book, there's a section on what researchers call sales stigma, which of course informs all of beliefs that we have about the sales function. And that's often based on older, outdated definitions of what's required to be successful in contemporary sales. And of course, these stereotypes and Dan Pink's book, To Sell Is Human, revealed how so many people think about sales. If you look at the word cloud for thousands of people's first image of sales, what comes to mind? Pushy, yuck, smarmy. You know, it's like all of these definitions that are outdated, despite the fact, and I think this at Integrity Solutions as well as anyone, consultative selling, selling solutions, selling value, these ideas are not new. They have been around for over four decades in literature and longer than that in practice. So You have to wonder, why is that mindset take so long to take hold and influence the decisions, the choices, the actions that executives take when it comes to designing and deploying their sales force?
When you think about those mindsets and stereotypes, that's not just from the customer perspective. That can be from the salesperson's internal perspective too. Their own sort of, whether it's conscious or subconscious, their beliefs based on past experiences of what selling is like. And I think your point about one of the reasons that sellers struggle to be more consultative and effective, that again has to do more with leadership.
In The Growth Leader, I reference this idea that culture is about the beliefs that shape behavior. So if you consider your culture as it relates to your sales force, I'm talking to you executives, talking to you salespeople, you sales managers, how you think about the sales organization and what is required for success determines so many actions, decisions, choices that you make, who you're going to hire, how they're going to be developed, how you're going to manage them, what you're going to measure, how they're going to be deployed in the market, and dozens of decisions that influence whether or not we go to market and sales is based on a transaction or it becomes a point of competitive advantage.
Let's shift then to both how sales executives, sales leaders, the C-suite, et cetera, should be thinking about sales differently.
There's two fundamental points that executives have to recognize if they're going to lead their organizations toward growth and use sales differently than they have. The first of which is to recognize that the sales experience is approximately 25% of the decision criteria in the eyes of customers. That comes from some McKinsey research. At the high end of the research with existing customers, that can be as much as 53% of the decision.
That was Gartner research said for existing customers was up to 53%.
I went with the conservative and said, okay, McKinsey research for brand new customers. Ironically, the more they know you, the more the sales experience influences their decision. But if you consider that 25% of the customer's decision comes from their interaction with your sales team, all the things that happen in what I call the first mile of the customer experience, the sales experience. And if that's not good, I always say they'll get off at exit one and have a customer experience elsewhere. If you consider customer experience and the popularity that it has received, the attention it has received with its own acronym, CX, everybody knows what it is. Sales experience is not talked about. And yet, it's a quarter to half of the decision criteria. So you got to ask yourself as an executive, strategically, am I paying any attention to the sales experience at all? Or am I just pushing for numbers? Am I thinking about how the sales experience is a part of my bigger go-to-market strategy? I have all the information about our competitive advantages in that strategy. Where is the sales experience? Is it an afterthought? Is it conspicuous by absence? You tell me.
One of our previous episodes, we talked with somebody who talked about customer experience touch point mapping. And basically, like from the first time a customer prospect ever remotely hears of you all the way through the sales cycle and thinking of it, like you said, through all of those different areas and the sales experience, both before the initial purchase and beyond, is a big part of that. There are so many points in there that have to be paid attention to and nurtured and being really overt and strategic about, or else, like you said, they'll get off at the exit.
When I look at most CX efforts in organizations, they are dealing with everything that happens after someone becomes a customer, ease of use, service levels, and so forth, these kinds of things, interface, whatever it is. But there's precious little attention paid to the sales experience, but for what's the forecast this month, this quarter? Thinking about the sales experience, not just as our point of distribution to get the deal, but rather how do we differentiate and create value in that sales experience, make it valuable? I know that you guys have talked a lot about this on your podcast. How do you make that sales experience valuable with the form of insight and your expertise to help customers think differently, to help clients to see issues they hadn't considered or opportunities that they were not aware of, or ways that they could address their problems where they say, oh, I didn't realize we could do that. That's clever, creative, whatever it is, innovative. The first part is for executives. I don't have to do much to persuade an executive that innovation around their products and services is important. You say that once and it's, yeah, old news. But if I say, think about innovation in terms of your sales experience, that as a point of differentiation, not just distribution. not just the conduit for your products and services, but rather part of what you provide that's valuable that customers pay you a premium for. This is a different way for executives to think.
The Gartner piece specifically, that's counterintuitive to what people think. This idea that 53% of the purchasing decision among existing customers goes back to the sales experience. I think they can give that lip service because they think they've already bought once. It's a real mistake to think your product's so great that people are just going to fall in line and fall back to you over and over again. And that the sales, and this is saying that the flip side is true, that the sales experience matters that much more once you've already sold to somebody for the first time.
Whenever I share that data, people are like, wow, that is upside down from how I'd consider it. Maybe even a bit counterintuitive, right? Because what you'd expect is that they already know how great it is. So they'll just keep buying. All that really does is show us like you have achieved the point of table stakes. You're good enough to stay. But what makes the difference in your continued relationship, your continued ability to call them a customer that's current and paying you, is your ability to, in an ongoing way, be a good strategic partner for them, help them continue to address their issues, help them to reach their objectives and their goals. This is a fundamentally different way for executives to think about how they lead their sales organization strategically. I think sales managers and salespeople that have been through your training and so much of the other good training out there on sales strategy and selling skills understand this conceptually. But if an organization is not being led that way, if sales isn't a critical part of the strategy, the odds of a sales organization outside of the one or two top performers or top 15% of your sales team, right? Outside of them really getting that and embracing, that's a low probability unless leadership makes the change.
Leadership has to be aware of the conflicting signals they might be sending. If they say, yeah, we're going to train you and emphasize on what's about improving the customer's situation, helping them make buying decisions that are in their best interest, that sort of thing, versus the, like you said, the quarterly, like, we got to hit this number. We need you to just push the product because we got to hit this number, come hell or high water.
And I want to take a moment to press on that for a second, Will, because I think you're onto something important. Nobody, I don't think you, me, anybody would say, no, sales, you don't have to hit a number. You don't have to worry about that. Nobody is saying that. What we're saying is the way you lead them to do it matters. It will make a difference in the results. And the way you interact with your customers longer term may allow you to drive even greater results if you lead them differently, more strategically, instead of the transactional, what's the number? It's like, what's the number? Could it be higher? Could you bring it into this month? Is there a way that we could expand that number? Are you going to make the number? Could it be more? Instead of those conversations, they could be much more about how do we differentiate using our sales experience, because it's a big part of why they'll choose us. So we might as well be doing it better and more effectively and more valuably.
I've heard you say that, especially C-level leaders, that they always have a seemingly frustration with sales. They don't see them as consultative enough, all that sort of thing. What do you think that stems from?
Well, I think most of their frustration is that the ideas around consultative selling and value selling are easy to understand. I think you and your colleagues at Integrity Solutions know this as well as everybody. The concepts can be learned in a couple of hours. But they're not just ideas. They are technical, behavioral skills. I heard consultative selling once described as a psychomotor skill, meaning it required significant cognition and strategic thought to be considering what's happening here. What are the issues? How does our products and services dovetail against these to create better outcomes and manage the interpersonal interaction at once? That happens fast. I remember my first sales call. First time I ever went out after having lots of training and realizing, oh my God, that happened so quickly. Where did it all go? The frustration with executives is like, hey, we said, go ask questions, be consultative. Why aren't they doing that? I want to answer that question and say, the reason it's not being done is because it is a lot harder than you think it is. And you are not giving it enough strategic value, strategic attention, and strategic development as a point of advantage. Because if you are really good at it, you all know it makes a huge difference, but it is hard to get really good at it. It is not based on personality. It's a strategic discipline requiring considerable skill. So it's not valued enough. It's not invested in enough. It's, hey, we'll send people to a couple of days of training and get this done. It's not going to work.
Right. They have their sales kickoff and they bring in the great guest keynote speaker for 3 or 4 hours and think that's going to do it. But when they get out in the field, the behavior change isn't going to happen just in the classroom.
You know, we're in January as we record this. We're late January, so New Year's resolutions are falling off left and right at this point. It's like, why isn't everybody in great shape? All you have to do is eat a better diet and exercise. You've got a sales force that probably knows what they need to do to be in great shape. Are all of my people in great shape? No, I need my sales managers. I need my leaders. I need us as an executive team with a clear line of sight straight through the front line saying, this is how we do it. This is what it means. This is what it looks like around here. So our beliefs about what great selling look like shape every decision, every action, and every behavior in the organization. So getting a lot of clarity around that makes a huge difference. The stereotypes of hucksters and peddlers and snake oil sales infect the whole system. So people still have those points of views, despite the fact that we know today, successful sales does not look like that.
Those sort of underlying beliefs or conversely doubts about themselves based on past experiences, those are tough to turn around. And then the other point I wanted to emphasize is what you said about they're going to feel more motivated because they're going to feel more supported and backed if they're getting that sort of training, coaching, reinforcement of strategy throughout the year and not just in the like 3 or 4 session in the middle of January.
Without a doubt. I had some other research in the book that says 86% of CEOs do little, I'd say little slash nothing, to align strategy with sales. Again, this is fully a third of them are like hands off. I don't want anything to do. Just get out there and sell. That really does undermine a critical point here, because if you executives who are listening, you sellers, sales leaders in the audience here, I think as you're listening, consider that sales is the execution of the company strategy in the market every day, hundreds of times a day, sometimes thousands of times a day. And it either becomes a huge accumulation of wins or death by 1,000 cuts, because every sales call is a reflection of the success of the strategy. Are we with the right customers? Or are we calling on whoever would take the meeting?
One of many examples of clarity around strategy is who is your ideal customer profile? So often that alone just gets lip service, and it is this idea of we could sell to anybody. Our service is a great fit for anybody. It's rarely really the case.
Maybe it is. I don't want to argue with anybody over that, but you probably have it designed for a subset of the market that it's best for, that is most likely to buy it, buy a lot of it, and pay the right price for it. Strategically, every sales call would say, are we with those people or are we not? And I might be at the right company. You may be selling to financial institutions and maybe Bank of America is a great client for you. But if you're at the assistant to the assistant vice president level and someone can't make a decision, that's wasted time. That's non-strategic work. If sales is strategy in action, I always say every sales call represents the success or failure of your strategy. It's all right there, from ideal client profile that you had mentioned to are we with the kind of right contact that could authorize our purchases, or can they only say no to us? Are we having conversations about the issues and the opportunities that would lead this client to say, that's the right solution for me, and it's the ones that we've invested a lot in, or am I pitching and closing whatever I can at whatever price it is? Every one of these questions is not a sales question. I would contend it's a strategy question. If your sales team can't execute your strategy, and if you're one of those executives who's hands off when it relates to aligning sales and strategy, that's a huge missed opportunity.
I like that note, what you just said about, are you just in front of people that can say no, or are you in front of the people that can actually say yes? That's a subtle but very big distinction.
Who among us hasn't put tons of effort and energy into a sales cycle and proposals and sending you information and lunches and calls and emails with someone who really great that they are receptive and like you, but you're not going to get the business from them. So not to say that their value as a human being, fellow member of the human race, isn't important, but are you using that relationship strategically to get to a decision maker, or are you trying to sell to someone who can't buy from you? This is a big strategy question. You had talked about salespeople and how they think about sales. How many times have you talked with salespeople who say, I don't really sell, I help buyers to buy, or I'm not in sales, I'm in business development, or I'm more of a consultant, as if that's better, by the way, I'm a consultant. So it's like, how many ways can you run away from the idea that sales isn't a good thing? Whether it's for the use of the word sales or against, I don't care on the titles, but the idea about what it means to be successful in sales, this is the part that we have to shake people and say, you're not thinking about sales correctly. You're not being strategic about it. And it probably starts at the executive team, because that's where the beliefs that shape behavior are driven through the organization.
Sometimes it could stem from a lot of things, but like you said, that idea of, do you just tell people that you're in sales? Or do you run away from having the word sales somewhere in your job title or that sort of thing? That can be pretty telling.
For all of you who don't have sales in the job title, that's not a criticism. I'm not saying you've got to go put sales in the job title, but I'm more interested in what it means in terms of your thinking about it. I worked with an organization last year that changed their titles from sales reps to territory managers because they wanted to broaden the role. I understood this, and we were not against the use of the word sales. The most important thing is the job didn't change. Are they still responsible for selling things? But how are you thinking about what that means? Are you executing your company strategy? Are you part of the differentiation? Or you pitch and close and make the number? This is a fundamentally different approach, starting with leaders to the front line.
Scott, let's talk about how to make sales a truly strategic function and getting away from, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the transactional to true consultative relationships. You had written a piece for Chief Executive, and in that article, you talked about three ways to do that. And so I'd love to have you articulate some of that.
There are three ways that you can really think about designing and delivering a sales experience that's valuable and compelling, that propels customers to choose you. The first thing you have to consider is the sales experience part of our strategy. Have I thought about this? In as much as I have the competitive advantages about what we provide, have we considered and answered this question about how we provide it? How does our sales experience create value? And if you answer that question, it's going to come in a few different flavors. One of them is going to be helping customers with problems that they hadn't seen, helping customers to find solutions that they hadn't considered. How many times, I'll speak to everybody listening, have you met with a customer and they come to you and tell you, here's exactly what we need. And by the way, here's how you need to do it for us. So there's a huge opportunity there because you've seen their movie from your vantage point 100 times. They've seen their movie from their vantage point once. They know their situation. You have a much different perspective, much broader approach where you can help them to see what you're thinking about is actually suboptimal. There's a lot of better ways to do it. This is hugely valuable, particularly if you consider any part of your product or service or capability offering, having important decisions about customization, configuration, how we're going to even implement something. If you sell something with any kind of sophistication, this is a huge opportunity. A third leg of this one, which would say find the additional resources. In every company, you have subject matter experts inside the company and outside that could help the customer think differently. When customers think about value in the sales experience, it's about helping them think differently and take a different approach that works better for them. A lot of these ideas, I've got them described in this article and in other places, but I would suggest that many of you have probably heard some of these before. You know, I learned them 20 years ago from Neil Rackham when he wrote his book, Rethinking the Salesforce. And I worked for Neil, and I know you've got colleagues that also worked for Neil. So I'll highlight again, there's nuance and subtlety in the way that we describe these things, but very little on the sales behavior side is revelatory or skies open up and that's totally new thought. What is different here that I'm suggesting, it won't happen by getting your salespeople into training to get them to just do something differently. This is a leadership issue, and it's got to be a part of your strategy. You got to think about sales as the execution of your strategy and the sales experience as a strategic differentiator. This is the purview of leadership. Then salespeople will behave the way you need them to.
And this idea, like you said, if you want to be truly memorable and viewed as consultative, then if a customer comes to you and says, look, I want 5 of your X widgets, and you say, okay, how about 10? Like, you're not selling, you're really order taking. And if you can sort of reframe that into that idea of, like you said, helping customers consider new possibilities, or, oh, I hadn't thought of that before. And that can be in the sales sort of experience in the actual direct engagement, but that's also goes further upstream to when you're prospecting and trying to get in the door with people. That idea of, are you sharing your subject matter expertise, thought leadership, that sort of thing, that helps them think, wow, I'd never considered that. These guys might be somebody I should really talk to.
Quick story about that from someone who was selling something close to widgets. They were selling alligator clips. They were selling clips that hang and ground automotive trim pieces on an electrostatic paint line in an automotive manufacturing plant. So the seller here sells MRO equipment, all kinds of little stuff. The automotive manufacturing purchasing manager is saying, I just want X thousands of these clips that hold the things. The seller doesn't show up as a purveyor of clips. Say, tell us how you're using them and what's happening. Well, it turns out that the current clips, I'm going to abbreviate here for time, the current clips break a lot. But the problem when they break is that it shuts down the electrostatic paint line. Fast forward, the cost of that, calculated in the conversations and the sales experience, is $1.25 million an hour of cost based on overtime, missed production, and all of the related costs of shutting down a manufacturing line. All because of these tiny little clips. That conversation allows them to get into a discussion about a clip that's 300% more cost than the original ones that were asked for. Hey, I just want to buy these clips, these widgets, and allows them to justify this because of a massive cost savings. So a better decision.
You're not just selling clips. You're selling the answer to that, whatever you want to call it, risk mitigation, cost loss, productivity loss. You're reframing it an entirely different way.
By the way, you said widget and this sort of flashed for me. I'm like, because widget clip, it's like whatever you're selling, and if you're listening, you sell your version of the widget clip, more sophisticated services around it. But how many times people say to you, I want to buy that, and it's, yep, we'll give you that and we'll sell it. But here, this order was 300% more on the cost of the clips, and over time, more than quadruple the profit for the organization.
How does the sales experience tie into being part of in supporting the company brand?
This is about consistency of the promise of the brand, right? I think we've all had these experiences where you're going to meet with someone from an organization, and because you know that organization, you have an expectation of what that's going to be like. If it matches, that's fantastic. If it does not match that, if it's inconsistent, then it's like, whoa, what's going on here? If your brand is value and support and creating results and good outcomes for your business, then that sales experience better not be a walking, talking brochure. It better not be a pitch and close. It better reflect strategic discussions, strategic dialogues. Speak to those of you who sell services of any kind of sophistication. It's got to match that. Certainly, I mentioned the sales experience is the first mile of the customer journey highway. We could very much, and I have gotten into discussions with marketing leaders like yourself, is marketing mile zero? Does the marketing happen beforehand? And whether if that's happening before the interaction with a seller of any kind. But the second somebody starts to interact with you, that ought to be consistent with what the brand is in the market. Otherwise, you get a huge disconnect that will leave people wondering, questioning, skeptical.
And that ties back to what we've been talking all about, which is this idea of leaders need to make and think of sales more strategically. And that's a good idea. It's that idea of, okay, you've come up with, as a leadership team, your mission, your vision, your values, they're plastered everywhere on your website and everywhere else. But how are you actually helping your salespeople live and breathe those things and have customers experience those every day?
This is a big question because you certainly aren't going to do it at a town hall meeting in a presentation to tell them these things. You're certainly not going to do it in an email. You sure as hell aren't going to do it in a video conference with 300 people attending it. I always talk about the ability to inspire and motivate and help to drive people to higher levels of performance. My first book was called The Inspiring Leader. One of the critical behaviors that leaders exhibit when they want to move others to action is the ability to make an emotional connection. This is number one correlated behavior. And I always go out of my way whenever I bring up this research to highlight. I'm not talking about wild displays of emotions or excessive emotionality or group therapy or oversharing. That's not what I mean about emotional connection. I'm talking about how do you relate to individuals, groups, as people. Because we're emotional beings, few decisions, few actions are taken on logic or data alone or facts. There's the old maxim, reference this in the book, logic makes us think, emotion makes us act. I think if you're listening, you know that to be true. So how do you make an emotional connection? How do you bring the right kind of energy and enthusiasm? How do you bring clarity about your strategy and your vision and paint people into that picture about their role in it? Here we're talking about the sales experience and sales as the execution of strategy. I think there's great power in anger when it's used right. Most of the time, leaders overuse it or misuse it. But for leaders who can get behind the anger instead of just blowing up and talk about things that they're concerned about, that they are fearful of. A lot of anger comes from, hey, I'm afraid we're not going to achieve the goal we had and the consequences of that. If you can get to that and talk to people about what it means, what you're concerned about, what you're disappointed in, and have those kinds of conversations, then the whole range of emotions can be valuable if you're looking to inspire and move others to action.
Like you said, if selling is so strategic that it hinges not just on the logical, but also on all the emotional factors, then motivating your salespeople, getting them to execute your strategy, that has to come from an emotional place too.
We started part of the conversation talking about how executives are so frequently disappointed or frustrated in their sales organization, not getting what we want from them. And then you have to ask yourself why. Well, we're talking about changing the behaviors of dozens, hundreds, in many cases, thousands of people, and changing the way they carry out your strategy in the market. That's going to take a lot of connection between the strategy, what we do, and your emotional connection, what drives them to do it. And then, of course, then you can get into all the really great skills development and help people to become better. I think you guys are market leading experts in that. It's in a critical part of the equation, but I'd say necessary, not sufficient for leaders who are trying to drive a result.
Alluding to another part of that sort of emotional aspect is helping salespeople understand that you're invested longer term in their professional growth. Because like you said, you can't have these things come to life through a town hall or a Zoom meeting or a recorded video from the CEO or whatever. They've got to know that you're behind them consistently all the way going forward.
To decode that and just make it the crib sheet on it, make sure that your sales team knows that they're not just there to produce numbers. That's a great outcome for them, but they're there to create a great sales experience. Why? Because it's part of why customers will choose you, and that will produce the numbers. Make sure they know that they're not there just for the numbers, that they are the representation, the execution of your strategy in the market every day, that this is more than just being out there to pitch and close. And of course, when I ask people, tell me about the most inspiring leaders you worked with, inevitably, the stories I hear are they invested in my development, my growth. They helped me to achieve a greater career. This is a huge thing for leaders at all levels. And if you're in the executive suite, making sure you create the environment for that. If you're a frontline manager, make sure you are the coach for that. Whatever it is, this makes a huge difference.
Because helping your salespeople understand the difference between winning a deal and winning and keeping a customer, those are two drastically different things.
Don't they have a huge implication for the top and bottom line?
That idea of all the numbers out there around what it takes to win a new customer versus the value of keeping an existing customer. I think you're emphasizing that.
We all have customers. We've all had customers who are like, we did not do well with that customer. That was the wrong kind of customer for us. They may have even cost us more than we made on it. So getting the right customers who value you, who are willing to pay your fees with healthy margins because they're the right fit. You can't get enough of that. And that is the execution of strategy, not just get out there and sell.
Talked previously about some of these ideas around the intersection or the overlap of the customer experience and the sales experience. You're talking about sales as the first mile, that sort of thing, which is dead on. Anything else that you would share around why the sales experience is rarely talked about as a driver of the customer experience? Anything else there?
I think a big part of it is that few buyers want to admit that they were swayed or influenced because of the person. They want to think, I made the decision based on the product, the service, the brand, the promise behind all of that. And if even in the original research for McKinsey, that sales experience only accounted for 8%, that was in the buyer surveys when they asked people. when they did the regression analysis and went back and say, what was the actual behavior based on the actual performance? That's when they found this huge disparity. So there's something about admitting, oh yeah, I was influenced by sales. You're not going to hear a lot of that. Your sales experience is more influential than anybody's going to tell you. There's another side of it at the executive level, which is, how am I going to go to Wall Street or to my investors and my board and say, we're competitive in everything else, but our sales team is the best? But you've got to have a lot more strategy behind it if you're going to make that claim, and most executives don't know how to. So to think about the sales experience as a point of competitive differentiation has been an idea that hard to quantify, because buyers won't tell you the same thing that their behavior reflects all the time, right? It's why we know you never trust the data in a self-survey on its own. Lots of survey work in my career. People are wonderful at putting down data in a survey that doesn't reflect their actual belief or behavior, but rather what they want to put down.
Sometimes you have to have those surveys be done independently and anonymously, because the customer, if the salesperson or the organization is asking you for that feedback, they're probably naturally going to sort of hold back. They might not sort of really reveal.
And even then, I'd say, how many times have you seen, not in your industry, buyers in a different industry, clients in different places, make a decision that makes you scratch your head? You're like, why did they buy that? That would be worse for them. Why would they make that decision? If you're looking at it with pure objectivity about the features, the benefits, the brand, the service, whatever, you wouldn't make that decision. Something else is at play, but decisions aren't purely logical. They never are. And they're not purely based on data or facts. There's a different part of it. That's the experience they have with you. Make it valuable. Make it one filled with insight and expertise. You can win that. It's hard for executives to describe that as a point of competitive advantage.
This has been really great, Scott. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with me today. This has been really valuable and I think very insightful for our listeners.
Great to talk with you, Will, as always.
For those of you listening, thank you for taking time out of your day from wherever and whenever you might be listening to this. We always appreciate you spending time with us. You can find and follow Scott Ettinger on LinkedIn, where he posts regularly a lot of things about what we've discussed today and otherwise, and on X at Scott K. Ettinger. His website is scottettinger.com, and be sure to check out his newest book, The Growth Leader, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you get your books. Thank you again, everybody, for listening to us. Please make sure that you're following us on whatever podcast platform you might be listening so that you don't miss future episodes. Scroll back to any that you might have missed from our recent library of episodes and guests. And of course, as always, leave us a rating, a review, tell a friend about us. Thanks so much for being with us today, and we'll look forward to having you with us next time. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed, and as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.